Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
yeah, they did.
We're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia.
They gave nuclear power a try. What a mess that's become. This is Harvey Wasserman. We're back with another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Hour. I am in San Luis Obispo, California, home of the horrifying, despicable, worthless, useless, and ultimately deadly nuclear power plant called Diablo Canyon. It is in a place called Diablo Canyon. It was named Diablo Canyon because an earthquake hit it while the Spaniards were there. It had been previously sanctified, sacred territory, to the Chumash, the Native Americans here in sunny central California, or coastal California. I did come up on the train, by the way, and I want to give a little travel advice. Anybody who's in California who's looking for an amazing thing to do, ride the train from San Luis Obispo to L.A. and back, actually all the way down to Tijuana, if you can stand going through the city of Los Angeles. Train ride up the coast from L.A., starting in Ventura, and then for about 3 hours up to just south of San Luis Obispo, is absolutely gorgeous. It just goes right along the highway. I'm along the seacoast, along the beaches, and I have to say, I don't know what drug I was on, but I looked out at part of the trip, and there were buffalo along the plateau above the ocean. I guess someone was raising buffalo in the central coastal California there, and it was really a sight to behold. I have done this twice. I'm going to go back down on the train Friday to L.A. And so just a little travel hint, put it in your coat pocket there. If you're in California, if you need to go between L.A. and San Francisco, the ride to San Francisco is not so great. They put you on a bus. But from San Luis Obispo to L.A., do not miss it. It's absolutely spectacular. The ride, of course, I get senior fare, but the ride from Burbank to San Luis Obispo is all $35. So that's $35 I spent, and I'm going to be taking the train back down on Friday. Do we have John Giesman with us? John, are you there?
Yes, I am, Harvey.
Oh, fantastic. There is a welcome voice. John, you're coming from the Bay Area, so you can't take the train ride I just described. But you
That's
are
correct.
Down to Sam, are you driving or are you going to take the bus?
I'm driving.
All right. Well, I advise against it, but you probably have to get back at a specific time. So we are having hearings here. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, otherwise known as No Real Chance or Nobody Really Cares, is holding a hearing of all places and at all times. I don't know who scheduled this for them, but they're having it on August 5th, the day before the 70th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima, or Hiroshima, as we call it in Japan. And this hearing, well, you are the expert. You're the legal guy. Of all the people who are going to be testifying tomorrow, this testimony starts at 1 or 1:30 and goes to, I think, 4:30 or 5, and then they break, and it starts again after 7. I'm going to try and arrange some kind of media presence in between the two hearing schedules there. You are going to be testifying on behalf of A4NR, I assume, the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, so tell us, and we'll get into Diablo Canyon. I have had shows on Diablo. This is the one nuclear power plant that could, if God forbid, blew up, melted down, exploded, you name it, could actually irradiate all of North America. It is, you know, smack in the middle of the California coast. And so the radiation, if it followed a Chernobyl path or a Fukushima path, which went across the Pacific, could do us all in. Tell us a bit, if you would, about this hearing and the current status of the two reactors at San Luis Obispo at Diablo Canyon.
Well, this is what's called an environmental scoping hearing, where the NRC is taking public comments as to the scope of environmental issues under the National Environmental Policy Act that should be considered in the NRC's environmental impact statement that will be issued coincident with the NRC's decision on whether to relicense Diablo Canyon. The proceeding has been suspended for a little more than 4 years, and the NRC really at its own initiative, because PG&E is being very cagey as to whether they've made a decision themselves on pursuing relicensing, the NRC has decided to move forward anyway without a clearly committed applicant, and this is the first in what will be a series of environmentally related public sessions and solicitation of written comment to try to determine what scope of issues the NRC should look at in reaching for the rubber stamp to grant a relicensing approval.
Did I detect a tad of cynicism there? Are you predicting?
It's realism, Harvey. They have never, ever, ever turned down an application to relicense an existing nuclear power plant. And in this situation, they've actually had to go to an applicant who at least publicly professes not yet to have made up its mind and said, well, come on, let's get going. We've got to get this relicensing completed.
So you want to
take odds on whether or not it's ultimately approved?
That's funny. I guess it's funny using the term funny advisedly. You're saying that the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, is twisting Pacific Gas and Electric's arm to proceed with these relicensing proceedings?
Yeah, I think that's more a budget play on the part of the NRC staff than anything else. I have no doubt that ultimately PG&E will seek to have the plant relicensed, but they have at least adopted the public posture that they want to wait and see whether the State Water Resources Control Board requires them to eliminate their once-through cooling system, which would prompt a very expensive retrofit of cooling towers that PG&E may not feel was economically worthwhile. Secondly, they want to wait until they've gotten feedback from both the state of California and the NRC about the seismic studies that they have recently turned in. And third, they were supposed to, when they suspended the proceeding right after Fukushima, they were supposed to determine what they would need to do to comply with the California Coastal Commission's requirement that they conform to the California Coastal Plan under the Federal Coastal Zone Management Act. Now, my client has pretty carefully monitored any contact that PG&E has had with the Coastal Commission. And that's been pretty easy to do, because up through the last time we checked, which was a couple of weeks ago, in the 4+ years since the proceeding was suspended, PG&E has had no contact with the Coastal Commission about meeting its requirements. So the NRC is jumping the gun here, and they're jumping the gun because the Republicans in the United States Senate have noticed that the nuclear renaissance, which had justified a large increase in staff positions at the NRC, never seems to have happened. So the NRC staff is bloated up to a level to process a number of permit applications that have simply never materialized. So the NRC staff is in the process of what, when I was in the bureaucracy myself, we used to call make work. And this particular relicensing proceeding, or at least the timing of the reinstatement of the relicensing proceeding, appears to be that very thing.
That's really amazing. John Geisman, the attorney for Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, talking about the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant and the licensing. Let's, you know, if it weren't so tragic, if this nuclear plant didn't have the capability of wiping out the entire Earth, this would be a bit of a comedy here. So let's take it from the top. You're saying that PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, which was once, I don't think it is anymore, it was once the world's biggest electric utility. I think Duke might be bigger now, but nonetheless. They are hesitant, ambivalent about applying for a relicense application, a relicense extension at this point in time because they don't know how it's going to play out with the state of California, and we'll get into more detail on that. And so you're saying that in the meantime, the Congress has voted more money to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on the idiotic presumption that more nuclear plants are going to be built. Apparently they're listening to all these fools running around on talk shows touting the nuclear renaissance. Lead among them, by the way, my former colleague at Greenpeace, Patrick Moore, he came long before I did, but he was a member of Greenpeace early on. He has been out front promoting new nuclear as a founder of Greenpeace, and he is also, I love this, a climate denier. He does not, while all the other so-called environmentalists who are pushing nuclear power are doing it with the excuse that somehow nukes are going to help us solve the climate crisis. Patrick Moore, the number one guy, the lead-off batter, is actually denies global warming. I love that. And it's just always a twist here. So what you're saying now is that the Congress passed money onto the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to handle the anticipated flood of applications that they thought was going to happen with the so-called nuclear renaissance. And in fact, since the nuclear renaissance has not materialized in any way, shape, or form, the staff is out looking for projects to justify their existence. And so they have, or at least their existence on the payroll. And so they have now twisted Pacific Gas and Electric's arm to go ahead and proceed to get their license extended, even though they're not sure they really want to do it, so that the staff at the NRC will have something to do. Is that what you're telling us?
That's what I'm telling you, and I'm telling you that from the vantage point of having led the California Energy Commission's power plant siting process back in the late 70s, when we faced a similar downturn in power plant applications. You know, you want to maintain a certain headcount within the staff. Your permit applications are dwindling down to nothing. You got to invent something. So in this instance, I'm afraid it's a takes one to know one, but I've seen this movie before.
So I think what we should do at the hearings is should we come in and we should put a pile of rocks on one side of the room, and then we'll all carry the pile of rocks over to the other side of the room, and then periodically we'll move them back and forth to symbolize what's really going on here with the license application. Okay, so now let's get down to some hard facts here. A lot of the controversy that's current over Diablo, and Diablo, of course, is the nuclear power plant in the United States where the most people have been arrested. There were more than 10,000 people arrested at Diablo Canyon back in the day, and I was one of them. I spent three lovely nights in the San Luis Obispo County Jail. I would recommend it, but I haven't been there lately, so I can't know if they've renovated and or whatever. I did not like my orange jumpsuit. I will have to say that orange is not the new green right now. People are not really doing these mass civil disobediences anymore. We're a little old. Property values have gone up, and the impact seems to have gone down. So what you're doing is, as a lawyer, as an attorney, is the cutting edge. Now, the number one thing that has erupted around Diablo Canyon in terms of public safety has been the report that was done by Dr. Michael Peck, who was the chief resident inspector, safety inspector, and correct me if I'm wrong about that, at Diablo for about 5 years. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So we have inside the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, inside the gulag there, a chief resident inspector, safety inspector, at one of the biggest nuclear sites in the country. Diablo is two 1,100 megawatt reactors. They actually don't get any bigger than that. I don't think there are any bigger single reactors in the country than 1,100 or thereabouts. And then we have two of them at Diablo, which is not that common. And Dr. Peck, in his role as chief safety inspector, did something very rarely done at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. He wrote a report saying that this plant, these two reactors, need to shut. And the reason they need to shut is because they are, I'm paraphrasing, so you'll correct me if I'm wrong. The reason they need to shut is because they cannot withstand the earthquakes that could be delivered by the dozen reactors that have been found surrounding Diablo Canyon since the reactors were designed and built. Is that a fair appraisal of Dr. Peck's report?
Yeah, his focus, because remember, he's at root, he's a cop. He's a PhD in nuclear engineering cop, but his role is to apply the law. So when the shoreline fault was discovered, PG&E was required to do an independent analysis of this new information. And the NRC staff was supposed to do a parallel evaluation. Peck looked at this analysis, and frankly, it was the day after the San Bruno gas pipeline explosion in Northern California. And Peck walked into...
We're going to have to explain that for a moment. Pacific Gas and Electric is a huge utility. They do electric, but they also do gas. And they had gas pipelines. They have gas pipelines all over the Bay Area. They had a series of gas pipelines in the very comfortable town of San Bruno. The pipelines, as was later turned out, were not properly inspected, even though PG&E had been warned that they were deteriorating. And do you know the date that they blew up?
I think it was September 10th, 2011.
Okay, so, geez, you're kidding. September, so one day before the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, they blew up, and eight people were killed.
Were killed, and I think 38 houses were destroyed. Took out an entire neighborhood.
With a natural gas explosion, and this was completely due to negligence.
So the next day, Peck walks into a PG&E staff meeting at Diablo Canyon and says, you know, I've been looking at your assessment of the shoreline fault, and I have concluded that it does not meet the safe shutdown earthquake standard imposed by your license. In fact, I think it generates ground motion 60 to 70% greater than those defined as the safe shutdown earthquake in your license. And in fact, I think the same is true of the San Luis Bay fault and the Los Osos fault as well.
Put me back in.
And PG&E freaked out. My client was able to get discovery of a bunch of PG&E internal emails describing how they responded to Dr. Peck, and they went through a several-month period of obfuscation denial. And then they finally came up with a strategy to overcome him. And they said, well, you know.
Let's clarify. First of all, the Dr. Peck's document was not intended for public distribution. Is that correct?
Yeah, let me clarify, because I think the document you're referring to is an appeal that he ultimately filed a couple of years later after he had been squashed by his management and transferred to Chattanooga, Tennessee.
So the chronology is that he initially wrote a report questioning the ability of Diablo to withstand the earthquakes.
No, initially it was all verbal.
Oh, it's verbal.
He went for an extended period of time before he threatened to write up PG&E for a violation.
Who did he complain to verbally, this energy inspector?
The plant management. And he, of course, communicated this within the NRC as well. PG&E ultimately responded by meeting with the NRC staff in Washington repeatedly over a proposal to amend the license to redefine the safe shutdown earthquake.
They
said,
all right,
if you can't meet the law, change the law.
Right. So in response to Dr. Peck's verbal admonitions, warnings to the commission, I assume at some point in time he must have talked to PG&E as well. Did he have any conversation?
Oh yeah, no, he talked to PG&E first. He was the senior guy there at the plant for the NRC, so he immediately told PG&E that he thought they had a problem.
Well, I'm surprised he's still alive. I mean,
well,
okay, so we'll
I think
we'll
that's
pass
a
that
question, Harvey, of whether you think living in Chattanooga is being alive.
Yeah, well, we won't comment on that. Just for your information, the last three shows I did with my co-writer Bob Fitrakis were about the theft of our election process, and it just happens that the servers, the computer servers that they used to steal the Ohio election in 2004 and give George W. Bush a second term were in Chattanooga. Now, I'm not saying there's a connection, but it's one of those coincidences. Okay, so Michael Peck, the chief resident NRC, PhD in physics, goes to PG&E and says, I don't think this plant can withstand the earthquakes. And then he goes to the NRC as well, and they have a discussion in D.C., but Dr. Peck has not written anything, right?
Right.
God. And so then before he gets anything written, they ship him off to Siberia. Otherwise,
no,
Chattanooga.
It took an extended period of time. He did write him up for a violation. Peck's new supervisor came onto the scene, and in a conference call with PG&E, according to PG&E emails characterizing the call, he said, you know, when you guys refuse to do this analysis, it really makes it look like you're hiding something. So you got to get it out of your license, because you just don't have a good explanation for why you can't do the analysis that Peck wants you to do. So PG&E pursued a license amendment strategy until the NRC staff finally figured out back in Washington that that's what they were trying to do, was get the test swept under the rug. The NRC staff said, you know, nobody's ever come to us before to redefine what the safe shutdown earthquake is. So before we make a ruling on that, why don't you give us a table that shows where you're at variance with the standards that we would apply to a new plant? And it so happens that in 1997, the NRC did adopt new seismic evaluations to apply to these nuclear renaissance plants that were supposed to materialize. So the NRC staff wanted PG&E to produce a table that would make this comparison. PG&E came back with a 334-page table of variances and non-compliances with those 1997 standards. And at that point in time, the NRC staff said, well, maybe we got another way for you to deal with this problem. Why don't you withdraw your license amendment, because we're not going to approve that. Kick the can down the road. We're going to require every plant in the United States to reevaluate their seismic compliance, and that'll give you until March of 2015 to do this review. And we're not going to change the safe shutdown earthquake. We're gonna require that you do this analysis, and we're gonna predict right now that you will fail that analysis. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And for now, get this damn license amendment out of here. And that's what they did. And that's when they shipped Peck off. They reversed his citation of PG&E for noncompliance. He filed something that at that point in time was called a non-concurrence. That's what my client discovered in the files. And then after he was transferred, he elevated his dissent to something called a differing professional opinion, or DPO. The NRC is under very strict time frames as to how quickly they are to deal with a DPO. And if my memory serves, the most they're supposed to spend on what they call even the most complex DPOs is something like 90 or 105 days. Well, with PECs, they sat on it for over a year. And you're right. That DPO was not supposed to become public, but Friends of the Earth somehow got wind of it and blew the whistle on the fact that the NRC was sitting on it. That triggered first an NRC denial of the DPO itself. And then
they denied it existed?
No, they rejected it.
Well,
he offered a different
profession.
Yeah. Well, they didn't deny it existed. They overruled it. They said, Peck, you're wrong. So then Peck filed an appeal, and the NRC disagreed with his appeal as well and announced the denial of his appeal about an hour after PG&E had released its state seismic report last September.
So there was obviously a concert going on, let's put it that
way.
Yes,
although the NRC staff has denied that. The Office of the Inspector General at the NRC is continuing to investigate the extent to which collusion went on.
All right, we're talking with John Geisman, the attorney for Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, about the two mega nuclear reactors at Diablo Canyon, California, surrounded by a dozen earthquakes, earthquake faults, God forbid, and only 45 miles, by the way. The one earthquake fault they did know about when they built, or that everybody knew about when they built Diablo, was the San Andreas. My understanding is the San Andreas fault is 45 miles from Diablo or thereabouts, which is half the distance that the earthquake was that destroyed Fukushima. I will tell you, John, that I took a huge sacrifice that I made for my movement, and I went to see the movie San Andreas, which was incredibly painful. And it was on the second, it was the night of the second Warriors Cavaliers playoff game, which was actually the best of all the games. So I missed it, and I went to see it for one reason, which is I had been told, but I felt a journalistic responsibility to confirm that this movie about the mega earthquake on the San Andreas Fault does not mention anything about nuclear power. The word nuclear does not appear in the entire movie, San Andreas, even though a quake anywhere near the magnitude that they portrayed in the movie would absolutely level Diablo Canyon. So I deserve a Purple Heart for doing that on the part of the movement. If I'd known the movie was getting as bad as it was, I would have brought something to read. But, you know, what can I tell you? So they did know about the San Andreas. Is there anything in the record that indicates that they looked at the possibility of an earthquake going off on the San Andreas and what impact it might have on Diablo Canyon?
Well, what they did, and that's how the license requirement was originally established, and how the so-called safe shutdown earthquake standard was applied. The first was something called the design earthquake, which was premised to be a 0.2 G ground movement. And then in order to assure adequate margin, they bumped that up to something called the double design earthquake, which would be a 0.4 G ground motion. And that was established as the so-called safe shutdown earthquake. Now, shortly after, the plant went into construction, and as it was about to reach the end of its construction period, they acknowledged that some shale oil geologists some years previously had discovered a fault offshore Diablo, about 4.5 kilometers offshore, called the Hosgri Fault, and that was believed to be capable of ground motion of 0.75 G. And that's what prompted a extended reevaluation before the plant could receive its operating license. The plant had to be completely redesigned and retrofit with earthquake safety measures. An additional cost of $4.2 billion in 1982 dollars was required, and a variety of what most people think of as simplifications in the analysis allowed, because you were assuming the Hosgri Fault would be substantially more forceful, so you could relax some of the conservative damping assumptions or soil structure interaction assumptions that had been included in the double design earthquake, safe shutdown earthquake standard.
But since the Hosgri, they've discovered 11 or so other earthquakes, faults, and those have not been accommodated with the design, obviously, because the plant was already finished.
That's correct, and the prevailing dogma that PG&E has promulgated, and which the NRC staff has embraced, is each and every one of those earthquake faults, coincidentally, is presumed to be of less threat than the Hosgri. So they have a mantra that they continuously repeat that, well, yes, Harvey, that shoreline fault is a pretty ugly circumstance, and it is quite a bit closer than we ever thought an earthquake fault could be to the plant, but it is enveloped by the ground motion response spectra associated with the Hosgri Fault.
Well, you got to credit them with a sense of humor anyway.
They would say the same about the San Luis Bay Fault or the Los Osos Fault or the Napomo Fault or the Oceano Fault, the Point Bouchon Fault, the Diablo Cove Fault. It's all enveloped by the Hosgri ground motion response spectrum, which most people back at the time of the original license felt they'd done a number of corner-cutting adjustments in order to rationalize that as an acceptable fault to tolerate.
Oh, my God. And so basically now, my image, my visual image of the fault system around Diablo is basically, with that many faults in that small area, you would think of it kind of as a piece of shattered safety glass, where you just have all these different cracks and they're all interconnected. And I think that's been a big part of the dialogue lately, is the understanding now that these faults are all definitely connected.
Yeah, that's a pretty good metaphor to use, because, you know, when we speak of the word fault, you tend to think of a specific line on the ground. But in reality, the way the geologists characterize these things as fault zones, they don't know precisely where the line is. And in fact, there are a multiplicity of lines within the Hasgri fault zone, or the shoreline fault zone, or the Los Osos fault zone. And they're pretty wide corridors, which suggests the level of uncertainty and, frankly, scientific ignorance that we still have as to the exact configuration of an earthquake within that fault zone and its impact or potential impact on the plant.
Mind-boggling. So it's fair to say that really the discovery of these new fault lines, whatever they want to say about the Hasgri, which they allegedly accounted for, these new fault lines really should have required additional modifications to the reactors. Which I think what they're probably going to do, John Giesman, is jack up the plant and stick a bunch of tires under it. I think that's probably the most effective thing that they'll come up with. We're talking with John Giesman in anticipation of hearings on Diablo Canyon nuclear plant in Central California. Dr. Peck, we have to hand it to the guy. I mean, he's really persisted. Is anyone calling for him to be reinstated at Diablo, so at least we have I guess they'd have to give him bodyguards, but to get someone with some real objectivity back into the onto the site?
Well, I think the first key is to get him released from Siberia.
Does he speak Southern?
You know, he's stuck there in a career backwater position, quite isolated in Chattanooga. I don't think the NRC has any intention of ever allowing him to fill an important position within the agency again.
Well, I think it's entirely appropriate, and I certainly would call for his being reinstated at Diablo. I mean, nobody knows more about it than he's going to. He was
That's
there
correct.
For 5 years.
That's correct.
So we should maybe they'd throw in Barry Bonds and Madison Baumgartner and do a trade, something like that. So we're talking with John Giesman here. The earthquake issue is huge, obviously, especially since Fukushima. And you probably know, along with most others in the nuclear community, that there's now pretty serious evidence that Fukushima Unit 1, the General Electric reactor, along with the others there at Fukushima, was probably in a meltdown mode before the tsunami hit. And it's a pretty big deal. It's been controversial, but the evidence seems to be mounting. Of course, the tsunami came in and wiped out the backup generators, and that seems to have what really triggered the size of the disaster at Units 2 and 3. But I'm seeing studies now that say that Unit 1 was already on its way before the tsunami came, and that would be, of course, more relevant at Diablo Canyon.
Yeah, that would be relevant, frankly, at a lot of other plants around the world as well. The assertion is fairly controversial. It has been made since the original March 11th, 2011 event. And the difficulty is you will not be able to definitively establish one way or the other whether the earthquake itself had caused that damage to Unit 1 until you're able to get inside the containment. And that currently is projected to be quite some period of time before you can do that.
Right. Well, it took them, I believe it took them 9 years at Three Mile Island. And they had been denying all that time that there was a meltdown. And then, of course, it was discovered there was, in fact, a meltdown. They could not get a robotic device that could go in there and withstand the radiation, but they finally did that. And I assume at some point we'll see inside Unit 1 and the other units. Maybe even they'll find out what happened to the radioactive cores in Units 1, 2, and 3. We still don't know. So at the Apple Canyon, I want to pose something to you, though. John, here's a devil's advocate or an angel's advocate situation. What if there's somebody at the NRC who actually is concerned about Dr. Peck's assertions and has pushed forward this hearing so that the public is going to, and, you know, this hearing is in San Luis Obispo, which is a flashpoint, obviously. They don't always do the hearings where the reactors are. What if there's somebody in the NRC that really wants these issues vetted and that wants to accelerate the dialogue on whether Diablo should actually continue to operate? I mean, politically, this is not something that PG&E would want to have happen.
Well, I think the premise should probably be that there are multiple people within the NRC staff that don't necessarily want to be personally associated with a scientific whitewash. And there are enough flies on the PG&E seismic analysis to cause quite a bit of concern for those who are going to be professionally associated with it. The state has raised particular concerns with the quality of ground motion analysis and the sort of non-conservative assumptions PG&E has used in a completely data-starved environment. And the NRC staff in the past has raised concerns as to whether PG&E has enough data from the site itself to justify the ground motion assumptions that it is using. So at least hypothetically, I think you could see some pushback from within the NRC staff on several aspects of the seismic modeling. And you have to remember, Harvey, Diablo Canyon is an outlier from a seismic standpoint to the other nuclear power plants in the country. It is far and away the most vulnerable in terms of a beyond design basis earthquake and the level of ground motions expected to be associated with such an earthquake. I think you've started to see a little bit of distancing from the plant, both by EPRI and the NEI. In the cattle business, that's called culling the herd, where you want to separate the most diseased animal so that it doesn't infect or cost political capital that might be better off used defending the rest of the herd.
EPRI being the Electric Power Research Institute, and NEI being the Nuclear Energy Industry, both extremely pro-nuclear organizations. Is that right?
That's correct.
Well, that's an interesting, you know, if I'm PG&E, I got to say that the last thing on earth I want is a public hearing in San Luis Obispo the day before the 70th anniversary of Hiroshima. I mean, you know, maybe somebody in the NRC has got a sense of humor or is secretly doing this. I mean, this is politically, this is explosive stuff for PG&E. Now, we are expecting pro-nuclear people to show up from the plant, and, you know, the PG&E will bring in the buses, as they often do, and it's not going to be an anti-nuclear fun fest, I'm sure. But calling attention to this situation is not something PG&E is going to want. Now, you at the top of the show mentioned the state issues, especially water issues, that are in the background here, they're lurking in the background. Now, Well, of course, the history of the nuclear industry is that with the Atomic Energy Act of 1954, the industry has been a world unto itself beyond the civil law, and that's still, it seems to be the case with the earthquake issues, but it's not the case with the state water issues. So can you mentioned a couple of aspects with a planning commission and a coastal commission. So can you, we only got 20 minutes left, so if you could talk to us a bit about what's going on with that, John Giesman. I'd like to hear it, please.
Well, we're expecting at some point this year the State Water Resources Control Board to determine whether PG&E should be required to phase out its once-through cooling system at the plant. The state has imposed that requirement on all other coastal power plants, and they've really had a limited set of options. They either retrofit their cooling system to be closed cycle, so you're no longer bringing in the volume of ocean water that historically has been the case, or they shut down. The state wants a 93% reduction in the intake because of concern that of damage to the marine food chain. And the two nuclear plants in the state, San Onofre and Diablo Canyon, because they dominate those ocean flows from a cooling water standpoint, they were given additional time to review whether or not it would be technically feasible to retrofit the plant. San Onofre closed before the analysis could be completed, so you end up with Diablo Canyon, which represents, at this point, 78% of all of the once-through cooling water flow in California. The decision the state board is going to have later this year is whether its policy has any teeth or not. If you exempt PG&E, the policy is meaningless because 78% of what you're trying to reduce, you're going to give an exemption to. If you apply the requirement, PG&E is either going to have to build cooling towers, very unsightly, very expensive, cost estimates, according to Bechtel, anywhere from $6 to $12.5 billion, that most people think would be an economic non-starter. PG&E couldn't justify putting that much money into an old broken-down plant. Or, in the alternative, PG&E may choose to just shut the facility down. We've got reserve margins in Northern California in excess of 35%. So it's not as if we need the electricity right now. And the state's grid manager has determined not only is PG&E's Diablo Canyon plant not essential to the stability of the transmission grid, which is a big contrast to San Onofre, but it also is antithetical to the state policy to increase the use of renewables from 33% in 2020 to 50% in 2050. The grid manager did a review last year, 2014, 10 years forward, 2024, to evaluate the curtailment of renewable energy. We have so much wind and solar coming onto the grid now that increasingly there are hours where renewable generators are told, shut down. We cannot take your electricity. We're running a risk of overgeneration. The grid manager did that analysis for 2024 with Diablo and without Diablo, and it assumed that the 33% target had been met. With Diablo, you had 83% more renewable curtailments than you did without Diablo. So if your state policy is to go from 33 to 50%, and you've got to attract a lot of private investment in renewable generators in order to do that, Diablo is pretty antithetical to accomplishing that objective.
So what you're saying is Diablo is standing in the way of California converting to renewables. I should point out, but for background, that there were six reactors in California. There was one in Sacramento. Sacramento Municipal Utility District voted, the people voted to shut it down on June 5th, I think it was, of 1989. There was one under construction at Bodega Bay where they discovered that it was right on top of an earthquake fault. There was another at Humboldt, which did operate. That, too, was found to be right on top of an earthquake fault. And then we had the two at San Onofre, which, as you mentioned, have been shut through a great citizen's victory. And now we have the two, the last two at Diablo Canyon. Those are the last two reactors in California. They opened in the mid-1980s, so they're 30 years old. Everybody driving a 30-year-old car, raise your hand. These reactors were designed, John Geisman, in the 60s, right?
Yes.
So they are old. The design is old. There is rumor that PG&E wouldn't mind shutting them. What's their price?
Well, I think one of the problems is PG&E is preoccupied by a number of different managerial challenges and may have missed their opportunity. When San Onofre shut down, our Public Utilities Commission extended them pretty good terms to cover the cost of the shutdown plant. Southern California Edison was able to pass 70% of the cost of that shutdown, which at the time was estimated to be about $3.3 billion, through to its customers. You know, Edison broke the plant, but the customers picked up the bill. Now, at Diablo Canyon, had they immediately sought comparable terms from the PUC, they hadn't yet broken their plant. So arguably, they could have gotten their customers to absorb the full cost of premature shutdown. Our Public Utilities Commission has historically extended parity treatment to each of the investor-owned utilities to avoid the appearance of favoritism. They give a giveaway to one company, they feel compelled to offer the same giveaway to the other company. So PG&E may have missed their opportunity. I think in the utility business, it's pretty clearly understood there are a lot easier ways to make money than beating your head against a brick wall with a nuclear power plant that is continually in the news.
Right, and of course there's a ferocious battle going on at San Onofre about who's actually going to pay for this shutdown. Now, John, let me clarify. You mentioned once-through cooling. I'm not sure everybody knows. Once-through cooling, you take the water directly out of the ocean, you run it through the nuke, and then you pour it back into the ocean 20 to 40 degrees hotter. And the cooling towers would turn some of that heat into steam, contributing, you know, everybody's yelling about nuclear power as a so-called aid to global warming. I mean, what nuclear power does is it does emit greenhouse gases, but it eliminates the middleman. It just puts the heat directly into the atmosphere. And what you're saying now is that the California, there are California agencies, which it's the Coastal Commission and the Water Quality Board. Is that the two? Do I have that right?
That's correct. The Coastal Commission's jurisdiction is even broader because even if the plant were to be relicensed, the Coastal Commission would have a quasi-veto. They have to make a finding that the relicensing is consistent with the California Coastal Plan, and that allows them to get into the seismic issue, to get into the water issue. Their staff is called Diablo Canyon the largest marine predator on the West Coast because of the once-through cooling. So I don't think anybody expects the Coastal Commission to be very favorably inclined toward continuing Diablo Canyon's operation?
Well, here's the $64 billion question, giving a rough estimate of the quick damage that will be done if there was an accident at Diablo. Do these state agencies have the legal power to force Diablo Canyon to shut down?
They have the legal power to make it very financially difficult for PG&E to continue the operation of the plant.
Well, then you get into the political question. If PG&E was confronted by a state ruling that they would have to build cooling towers at the cost of between $6 to $12 billion, would the California Public Utilities Commission force the ratepayers to foot the bill?
I think not. I think the Public Utilities Commission would say to PG&E, are you out of your mind? What yeah. else could you buy for $6 to $12 billion that might be better suited to the needs of California?
I think that's a political battle that every activist in the world would want to move to California and participate in. You know, will the ratepayers of Northern California be forced to foot the bill $6 to $12 billion when you're in the midst of the biggest renewable energy boom in the history of the world to build cooling towers to keep a nuclear power plant surrounded by earthquake faults in operation? That would be something that I think people, the activist community, would just, thrive on myself. We're actually getting close to the end. John, you are extremely articulate. Are you sure you're a lawyer? You really talk beautifully, and it's always a pleasure to interview you. We've got 3 minutes left, barely. Give us what do you expect with these hearings, and what do you expect to happen with Diablo? Tell us, look in your crystal ball and tell us what's going to happen at Diablo Canyon.
I think PG&E management, at some point over the next couple of years, will decide that discretion is the better part of valor. They can make a lot more money upgrading their grid and interconnecting intermittent decentralized renewables, and that it's just a legacy problem from the past to continue to try and justify the ongoing operation of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. I think the state of California and its regulatory policies will accelerate PG&E's thinking along those lines. But ultimately, I think the decision will be up to PG&E management. And in the meantime, I think the NRC staff and commissioners will stand faithfully by with their rubber stamps in hand, attempting to approve anything that looks like it will perpetuate the Diablo Canyon plant into infinity.
John Giesman, thank you so much. I'll see you at the hearings. We've been talking about Diablo Canyon. This is for the archive, John. You're always a pleasure to talk to. And we'll talk to you next week. We'll give you a rundown on what's happening in Solartopia. This has been Harvey Wasserman. Thanks for to the staff in New York. And we'll talk to you soon with another Green Power Wellness Show.
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia.